name's Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on Blue Chip, on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker and will believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them. I must have this thing. So tonight, I am going to introduce Frank B. And I've seen him in these rooms. I don't know his story, but I know that he has a lot of sobriety and a great message and a double winner. Thanks.
My name is Alcoholic, and I'm Frank. I'm grateful to be here. I'm glad you all are here. Our best society is glad all of us are here, right? Amen. Hallelujah. Because I was not nice. I've been sober now, I guess today is my anniversary. I've been sober for 29 years. I've been a part of the same home group for 29 years. I've had the same sponsor for 29 years. And for somebody like me that never knew relationship, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. So I'm honored to be here. Sobriety do work. If you don't hear nothing else tonight, hear that it works. Because it's been a while since I did. Well, not been a while, but here lately I've not been going to that many meetings, so my story has changed. And what I believe in is treated alcoholism and untreated alcoholism. Can anybody hear that? Treated alcoholism and untreated alcoholism. Treated alcoholism is when I go to meetings on a regular basis. You know what I'm saying? When I go to meetings on a regular basis, then I'm pretty much sane. I can hold a conversation. How you doing, Frank? Well, I'm pretty good. I'm all right. I don't give you too much information. How you doing, Frank? Well, I hate them some bitches, don't I? I just tell you, well, I'm not doing that well, thank you very much, and shut up. You know, but if I don't come to enough meetings, then I give you way too much information. Can everybody identify way too much information?
Yeah.
And so I try to go to a lot of meetings so that I can go out and be in society and be a part of society. Now, I will share this with you. I did some volunteer work at a treatment center when I was new in recovery. And this treatment center was called CARP of Georgia. I don't know if... Yes, I know somebody in this room had to hear about CARP. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And we had a program. We had a program. It was based on Joe's and Charlie's dynamic. I'll think of the name in a minute. But anyway, it was a large treatment program. And we had all kinds of treatment programs there. We had fresh out of prison people. We had gay people, we had AIDS people, we had pregnant women. During that time, we had, during the crack era, they had, I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm just sharing my experience with you, what happened, but during that era, we had women that would come in, and they would let them come through this program because they was pregnant, because they wanted the baby to come through safe. And so they set up a program so the women could come through this program. And over in this place, we had co-eds. I mean, we had women and men. And it was sort of like a college-type recovery place here. You understand what I'm saying? We walked around with books. And we had classes. It was a great place for recovery. I know I'm not describing it well enough, but when you're desperate and you don't have any money, then it was a great place for recovery. Because I didn't have any money, that's why. They would let you go out and get jobs, and once you got a job, then you pay your way through the program. And then if you did it right, they would put you in an apartment, and then they put you in a house, and they help you buy a car. It was a great program. And so what I saw one day, I want to talk about alcoholism for a minute. What I saw one day was this: in the recovery program, it was a lot of he and she-ing going on. Y'all know what he and she-ing is. That's what they call it back then, he-ing and she-ing. I don't think they wanted to call a relationship because that was a bad word, because she wasn't supposed to be in a damn relationship. You know what I'm saying? So they would call it he-ing and she-ing. It was a cute little word for a relationship. But anyway, so what would happen was that the young ladies that was in the pregnant women program, after the guys would go out and get jobs, they needed cigarettes and they needed Pampers and they needed, and so it was a lot of that going on. And so it was all around. And so they couldn't do nothing about it because it was so smooth. I mean, when you're dealing with us, we're smooth. You know what I'm saying? We want our way. And there was a lot of people there that wasn't in recovery, so they didn't understand smooth. Yeah. But anyway, a lot of dating going on. And what happened one day was that they brought this little 16-year-old girl in there. You know, and she was easy to look at while being 16, and she had a baby, and she was pregnant again. And so when she got there, the older guys start paying a lot of attention to her, okay? And the women that was there didn't like it, because all of a sudden their business was being... Am I making sense? I don't want to lose anybody. But anyway, they were sort of upset, and so what they started to do, they started to pick at the little girl. You know, because they wanted control. And so the little girl started to fight back. And because she didn't have enough skills, because these was older women, they had been in the street for a while, right? This little girl didn't have a lot of skills, and so what she would do, she would fight back out of control while they was fighting with control. Everybody understand what I'm saying? I know who I'm talking to. I'm not talking to nobody that don't understand this. I'm talking to recovery people. I'm talking to smooth people. And so anyway, they got into, and so what they decided to do, because the system didn't know how to deal with this, they went to the older girls and asked them what was going on, and the girl told them that the little girl was out of control and she was having some mental issues, and that they was concerned about a baby. That's what the older girls told the official, right? And so what happened was they went and asked the young girl about what was going on, and the young girl, because she hadn't had enough experience with this, she couldn't explain to these people what was going on. And so they started believing what the clients were saying, and they brought in, what do they call those people that take your baby away? Woo! I know who I'm talking to. So they called defects in, and when they called defects in, defects came in and questioned the baby. And when they questioned the baby, she couldn't answer the question rightly. And they took her baby away. And when they took her baby away, they locked her up. Now, that was a sad scene, wasn't it? Yeah. That was a sad I'm just trying to tell you all a story about alcoholism. That was a sad scene, and look, felt like somebody got did wrong. But what if all of that was just alcoholism? You understand what I'm saying? What if everybody was under the disease of alcoholism, and nobody really meant to do what they did? Can you hear what I'm saying? See, I'm just talking about recovery. What if that's what all of this is? I mean, we get in here and we got attitudes and we got this and that, but what if it's just alcoholism? What if it's just untreated alcoholism? Because when I got here, I didn't know nothing about staying sober. I didn't know nothing about living a sober life. You know, how you doing, Frank?
Fuck you.
I didn't know what to say. You know, you was intimidating me. You know what I'm saying? I thought you wanted something. So I went back to the street. And so all I'm just trying to say is, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And welcome to the disease of alcoholism. Because when I quit drinking, I was introduced to alcoholism. You understand what I'm saying? And so what if this is all this is? This is a new way of life, which I didn't know nothing about. How many people know how to stay sober without drinking? I didn't want to quit because I didn't know how to do this. Every time the idea of me stop drinking and doing something different, I would go get drunk. So again, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, and welcome to, if you're new, welcome to the beginning of your new life. And what I had to do when I got here, I had to learn how to live this new life. I had a sponsor told me, he said, "Boy, I know you're brilliant. Why don't you just pretend you don't know nothing?" And that was a hard job for a man of my caliber. I didn't even know I was homeless. You know what I'm saying? I was in the treatment center, and you had to, in order to get food, you had to get food stamps. This is the kind of program I was in. And so they came to me and they interviewed me. They said, "Mr. Frank, where do you stay?" They were setting me up so that they could help me get the stamps, right? I said, "Well, I live in Decatur," because I knew some of the guys were living under bridges, right? And I said, "Well, I live in Decatur." And they said, "Well, what's your address?" I said, 435 3rd Avenue. He said, "You're not homeless." I said, "Hell no, I'm not homeless." And he said, "Well, Mr. Battle," he said, "well, who all live in the house with you?" I said, "Well, my mother, myself." And he said, "Well, where's the house with your name on the deed?" And I said, "Son of a bitch, I am homeless." I didn't even know. See what I'm saying? What alcoholism was, somewhere in the book it talks about we came here and became alcoholic. Isn't that something? We came here and learned how to be alcoholic. And what that means, what that meant to me, I had to come here and learn how to do this new life. Like don't go hang around your old playmates and old playground. Don't. If you don't pick it up, you won't get drunk. You know what I'm saying? And if you go to the barber shop, you get a haircut. They had to help me with this new language and new life. And so this has been an encouraging. This was an encouraging thing. But I had to surrender. I had to surrender to all that information that I had, because I came here with a bunch of information that had damn near killed me. And I had to learn to surrender to that information. But I came up in a small town down near Augusta, country boy. You know, just country, good country. I didn't know nothing about pimp walking and none of that. I didn't know nothing about none of that. I was just a country boy. How y'all doing? Just glad to see people. We live your house was 5 miles away and you didn't see too many people. And when you saw people, everybody, you go down those country town there, you drive through, people just wave at you. That's the way we were, right? Hi. And so when we got to the city, man, I was, hey, what? And them guys, man, these guys was cool, man. They didn't get that, man. They was head of pimp walking. I was glad to see people. So I didn't fit in. I didn't fit in at all. So I tell people I don't never want to be a kid again. Kids are nasty and rude. If they didn't know you, you fought. This is where I came up at. Some of y'all may have came up in those cute little neighborhoods to where they were, hi. But that's not my story. I came up in neighborhoods they fought. And so I had to learn quick how to be someone else. And so that's my story. Somewhere in the book it talks about, I think Silkworth said, we was in full flight from reality. You know what I'm saying? I didn't know who I was or what my role was in life. I came out to shoot faking it because I came up in a drunk house. My stepdad would get drunk and my mama would say, you better run. He got the shotgun and the whole house would go. You know what I'm saying? That's my story. That's how I came up. Again, everybody don't come up like that. That's my story. I'm not here representing Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not here representing. I'm here telling you my experience. I'm telling you what happened to me. And so, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I found a home group over in. They put me out. I went through the treatment center. They put me at the treatment center. And they put me out of the treatment center because I knew too much. I started trying to run the damn treatment center. None of y'all are doing that, right? And so they put me out, and when they put me out, they had already introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, man, I found a place. My home group was, my first home group was Clarkson 12-step group. And they talked about the steps. They didn't talk about each other. What was important was the steps. I would say something slick, you know what I'm saying? I'd be trying to talk slick. Well, the ramification of the situation is, and then they said, what page is that on, Frank, in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous? And so what they always did, they always took me back through the steps. And so I came in early and I incorporated the steps in my life real quick. I didn't, you know what I'm saying? And I was a one chipper. I was a one white chipper. And I say that because when I got here, I ran into a lot of people that had been in a lot of treatment centers that had picked up a lot of white chips. And they talked about that. And when they read from how it works, they read so profoundly, right? Rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover, people who cannot or will not. And I couldn't do that. I was so nervous I had to put the paper on the floor to read it. But those guys was profound. I couldn't figure out how the hell they got so smart. How do they know so much about this program? And I don't. But what I found out was that a lot of them had been relapsing. You understand what I'm saying? And I said to myself then, maybe I need to go relapse to get this information. So what I'm saying, if you're new, if you're one white chipper, you don't never have to pick up another white chip. That's the message that I want to give to you, because that scared the hell out of me, because a lot of people had repeated it. And it was my first time, and I thought that I had to do that. But anyway, I got here and I got me a sponsor. He was an old man, from Alabama, and I hung with him, and I got to my home group. And when I got to my home group, first job I had was I wanted to make money because most of the people in my home group had cars. I was tired of catching the bus. So that first year I was scared to get money, and so the first year I didn't work the first year. I just went to a lot of meetings because money was a trigger for me, and I knew that. And so I went to work and I did a lot of odd jobs. I started painting when I got out of the military. So I went and got me a couple of jobs painting people's houses, and I just get enough money to get me cigarettes and get on the bus, because at that time I was catching a meeting at Clarkson at 10 o'clock. Then I'd go across town to the Triangle, get a meeting over there at 12 o'clock, get back on the bus, come back to Clarkson, get a 2 o'clock, then I get a 6 o'clock at Clarkson, and then I get an 8 o'clock. And that was my day. And I did that for about a year because I was scared. They had told me enough about alcoholism to where I was scared to go back out and drink. And I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to look cool. I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to get in a relationship. Yeah, you get in a relationship, where the hell are you going to go? Neither one of us had a house.
Right.
So anyway. Get off my toes, Frank. Anyway, I went to a lot of meetings, and I went to a lot of meetings, and I got a lot of information. I studied the information. I became an information junkie. I loved this information. I loved the big book. I loved it. And I remember getting my first sponsee. He was a young kid, man. He probably about 16 years old. I told my story from the podium when I had about 6 months. And I came in running because I wanted to get in a relationship. And my sponsor told me I had to wait a year. And I figured if I hurry up and do the steps, loophole. If I hurry up and do the steps, then he'll let me get in a relationship. And so I rushed through the steps, and again, by the time I was 6 months, I had done the sixth step, and I told my story from the podium, and when I came off the stage, this young kid, 16 years old, walked up to me and told me that he was early on in life, when he was about 12 years old, he started shooting heroin in high school. And I know this Alcoholics Anonymous, this is my story. And so I started to sponsor him, but I told him, when you get ready to share this, it'll be between you and I. And I brought him from the 10th grade to the 12th grade. He graduated high school, went on up to California and started doing art or something like that. But that was my very first sponsee. And so what I found was that no matter what, the greatest gift that I had was I had enough experience to keep another person sober. The worst thing that I had done in my life was keep someone else sober. And so once I learned that, then I did more work and I did more work and. And Clarkson, when I got to my 10th year, I'd been selling cars for a while. I started playing golf, and I wanted to go out and start teaching again. And I put a lot into recovery. Here's what I realized. The more you practice, I don't give a crap what it is, the more you practice it, the better you'll get. It just blew my mind that's... Because athletically, I've always been quick with athletics. I've just been slow in administrative stuff. You know? Spell check, Frank. Well, get back with me on that. But I've always been... But anyway, when it came to time to playing golf, I would practice all the time. I mean, I'd get up in the morning, go do a little work, go to the driving range, get up in the morning, go to work, go to a meeting, go to the driving range, go to a meeting, go to the driving range. And at one point, I got really good. And then And then I found a young lady in the program, and we got married. And that cut out all of my golf. She needed way more attention than she needed a golf pro. And we got married. She was in the program. I broke the rule. I married a newcomer. She called me up one night. My sponsor wouldn't let me date women in the program when I first got here. So my first 5 or 10 years, I didn't date anybody in the program. He told me when it was time for me to date, he told me, he said, go out and date and have fun. And at that time, I was selling cars. And I'm going to tell you something, man. When you're selling cars and you're out there and the people bring you all that business over there and they're telling you their whole life story, man, I had a lot of fun. I did a lot of dating because I was sober. I had a job. I had a house. And hell, I would invite women over, and I look at them, they'd stop in the living room, and I could see them trying to figure out where they was going to put their furniture. you know what I'm saying? Because I was sober. I had a clear head, man. I was seeing. For the first time in my life, I was seeing, man. You know what I'm saying? And so, I'm going to tell you one thing that happened. I'll tell you one thing that happened. That was this one late young lady came over the house on the wrong night. And I was honest. I told each one of them the truth. I think I was dating about 4 young ladies at one time, and I told all of them the truth. I didn't lie. My sponsor told me, said, you can do this, but don't lie. And I didn't lie. I told the truth. And so she came over on the wrong night, and on the night that I was resting, and when she got there, I said, listen, why are you here? And she said, well, Frank, I wanted to come over. I said, well, listen, anytime I'm in your neighborhood, I call you first. I don't just show up over there. You don't just come over to my house. And she's all, Frank, get out of the way. And she stepped up on my doorstep. And you know what I told her? I told her what they've been telling me all of my life. You know what I told her? If you take another step, I'm going to call the police on you. I love that. For the first time, I was able to say, I'm going to call the police on you. But I had a lot of fun, but then I got lonely. And when I got lonely, I decided that I would start dating. But first, I went over to our sister program, and I started going to meetings over there because I didn't know anything about relationships. You know, I had abandonment issues and didn't know it. You understand what I'm saying? Because that's what my moms did when I was a kid. When I was a kid and I needed that attention, she would check out because she needed my stepdad more than she needed to give me attention. Why is that? Because my stepdad paid the bills. And what else? He was a drunk. And he needed that attention. And so I went lacking as a kid. Everybody in the house went lacking for the stepdad. And so she would always sit me up and then she would leave. And so what I found was that because she did it, the rest of you all did it too. And so when I got in relationships, I always looked for that thing to where it would look like you was going to go, I would run your ass off. You wasn't going to hurt me, I was going to hurt me. And I would run you off. And so I was never able to do a healthy relationship. So I went to the other program. I'm not here selling the damn program. I'm just telling you what happened to me. It may not be your story, but this is what happened to me. I got to the other program. When I got to the other program, I found that my mom was the first woman that broke my heart. And if she broke my heart, the rest of you all would too. And so I had to do work on that. And when I did work on that, I found a part of my amends to her was that I was riding with her one day in a van, and she was in the van with my uncle, and she loved her brother. She worshipped the ground that her brothers walked on, and while she was in the van with her brother, I was sitting in the back seat holding on to the seat, watching them interact, and all of a sudden, I watched her go from being a woman to a little child. She went back to her little self playing and having fun with her brother, and I'd never seen that side of her. And when I saw that side of her, walls just started coming down. And we got closer and closer, and when I saw that she was human too, I gave the rest of you all the right to be human. And so when I met my wife, and we got married, and I went to my sponsor because she told me one day, I was telling her to do something, you know, I was trying to get her sober. You need to do this and you need to do that, and she said, Frank, What you think that I need to do with my program, you can stick it up your ass. And I was insulted, man. I mean, but you know what? I fell in love with her. It just made me feel good all over that she. And she had enough courage to tell her brother that. And so what she helped me to do, she helped me to stay out of the program. And I called my sponsor and I said, listen, man, I got this abandonment issue thing. And I said, I don't think this marriage is going to work. And he said, well, I said, what do I do about the abandonment thing? He said, don't leave. I said, come on, man, it's got to be something better than that. He said, that's it, son, don't leave. And so we have had some fights. You know what I'm saying? The marriage ain't perfect. We had some fights, and when we stop fighting, I go downstairs, get quiet, and I wait. Normally, I go out the door, slam the door, peeling off. But I go downstairs and I wait, and 2 hours later, whomever wrong was knock on the door. I was wrong. And those are some of the most beautiful words in the world. You understand what I'm saying? Because I found somebody that I like. See, she's funny. You know what I'm saying? She tell me these little jokes when I don't even want to laugh. You know, she'll tell me a joke and we'll laugh for 15 minutes. I remember one time we got mad at each other and we were damn near headed for divorce, and I'm trying to figure out how the hell to get up out of there, where I'm going, and I'm sitting, and so I go pick up from work, and I'm bringing her, we're coming home, and we're not saying nothing to either, and she's sitting on this side, I'm sitting on, and we get to our street, and all while when we get to our street, I'm thinking, where the hell am I going to go stay? I'm tired of this shit. And all of a sudden, this dog come running from the backyard, and when we looked and saw him, he almost got hit, you know, ran out in front of the car. But when we saw him, he had a chain that looked like he had broken away, and the chains were hanging down his neck, and he was so happy to be free, he was running so fast, he was running sideways. We saw that man and we laughed for about 20 minutes. A sideways dog saved our marriage. So anyway, she's funny. She is she's a retired school teacher. She taught school for 30 years and it's she's a delight, and because of that, I will make those personal sacrifices. See how wonderful I am. I will make those personal sacrifices to do what I got to do to keep her into my life. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not afraid to let her go, because that's what you all have given me. You know what I'm saying? I'm not afraid to let her go, and because of that, I think our love is better. We got kids. Her daughter, when her and I first got together, she had a daughter, and the daughter was still using and drinking, and so when I met the daughter, the daughter tried to play me, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, and when she come at me, I've been through it, player. Take that somewhere else. And so she come at me sideways, and when she come at me sideways, I knew exactly what it was. And I told her one day, I said, listen, baby girl, a little pretty girl like you, when I was in the street, I would take you, I would held you hostage for about a couple of weeks until I couldn't get nothing else out of you. Then I would have pawned your ass. And you keep playing around in those streets, that's exactly what's going to happen to you. You know? I said, because I've been out there. And I was talking from my heart. I wasn't talking from my head. And she was an attractive little young lady. And I'm a man. I'm 100% man. And it was real hard to not take advantage of that situation. You hear what I'm saying? And this is some real stuff. This ain't no play stuff. I didn't come in here to play. I didn't come in the program to play. I came in here to save my life. And because I love me, I love her. And I love her by not letting her bring me to her hustle.
Right.
And when I didn't let me bring her to bring me to her hustle, about a month later, she came over to the house and she wanted some help. And my wife didn't want to let her go. And I told my wife, I said, listen, the only reason that you're holding on is because you're selfish as hell. And she said, Frank, what the hell you mean I'm selfish? That's my child. I said, you're selfish. You're selfish because you don't want to feel. She said, what the hell are you talking about, man? I said, if you let her go, you're afraid that something would happen to her and you'll feel that. It's why you won't let her go. And she got mad, got up, went in the room, slammed the door, and I started thinking again, why the hell am I going to move? here we go again. And so she came back out about 30 minutes and she said, you know what, you're right. That's exactly what it is. And so we made up, we got a plan together. We told this baby we will put you in an apartment for 6 months after that, because my wife couldn't let go completely. We'll put you in an apartment for 6 months. After 6 months, you're on your own. That was the plan we came up with. So we went out and found an apartment, paid the deposit, put in the apartment. When we put in the apartment, after 2 months, we went over to pay the rent. The little lady said, listen, I don't want your money. We want her out of here. This is the family community neighborhood, and we want her gone. And so she wouldn't take our money. She came back. We went over, pulled all the stuff out of the house, put it in the garage. She came over to the house that night, was planning on staying, and her mother, I was so proud of my wife. She looked at it. She said, Frank and I are getting ready to go to bed. What are you going to do? And she got up, got a couple of clothes, hit the street. And when she hit the street, about a month later, we started getting business cards from lawyers. Y'all know what that means, right? She's in jail. And so when we finally go down to see her, she said, she called me Frank Dad. See, I'm going to tell you how special that shit is, right? Because I was a real man with her, she called me Frank Dad. And she treat me like her daddy. You understand? Nothing but respect. That's just how big that shit was. But anyway, she said, Frank Dad, I had been praying to God for help. And she said, while I was at home one morning, they came and got me, and they had been stealing all night. And she said, I normally didn't go with them, but I got in the van that morning, and I was riding with them to sell the product, and I was sitting in the back smoking a cigarette. And she said, I got tired of the cigarette, flipped it out the window, and when I flipped it out the window, it landed on a police cruiser. And she said, all of a sudden, I saw the blue lights, and I heard, woo! And she said, and I said, thank you, Jesus. And because of that, that baby has been sober now for 10 years. And she got two beautiful grandbabies. My wife got two beautiful grandbabies out of that deal. Lila and Layla. They call me Grumpy. Hey, Grumpy! yeah, Grumpy. Yeah, because I do get kind of grumpy, but anyway. And you know what Grumpy is? Grumpy is telling the truth. But anyway, and my daughter has a kid. as a kid, and I got my first grandson. His name is Legend. He's 3 years old, and we just move along in recovery. You know what I'm saying? My wife has been sober now for about 4 years, and she started getting sober when I stopped sponsoring her ass. I had to stop sponsoring her, and I had to not be her co-recovering person. I had to just be the husband, because I couldn't be all of those things. You know what I'm saying? And because every time I was trying to be one of those things, I put expectations on her. When I was just a husband, you know what that meant? I don't know jack about being a husband, and I had to pay attention to that. And so anyway, this has been an incredible journey for me. If I could tell you all the wonderful things that this program has done for me, I would cheat you. And here's what recovery looked like for me. You know, we all got to talk, and we're some smooth people, man. You know what I'm saying? So it's not what I say. Not what I say that shows recovery. It's what I do. You know, I've not broken your house. I've not slept with your wife. I've not stole your money. The only thing I've done is try to walk with you harmoniously. That's all I've done. And so for me, that's what recovery looks like. I've been knowing people in this room for a long time, and people talk that talk. I listen to the talk, but I watch the walk. In closing, I'll tell you this: Joe Lewis, he was a member here, and Joe had about, when I met him, Joe had about maybe 18, 20 years, and he had a big medallion on his, he used to wear it, and he had diamonds in it for every year that he'd been sober. And I heard it was rich. And so I needed some help. So I guess I was about 4 or 5 years sober, and I decided I need me a financial sponsor. And I asked Joe, would he sponsor me? And he said, well, sure, Frank. And I was shocked that he decided to do that. And so I was hoping that he was going to die and leave me in his will. I mean, he was a multimillionaire. here's what happened with me and Joe. Joe would let me ride. I rode around with him. We went out and eat, and you know, we did a lot. He let me come over to the house. He had a couple of heart attacks, so I was a new person. He couldn't hear some of the conversation that I had. So he made me come over to his house and clean his yard up, and that's how he sponsored me. And one day we went out to eat, and we went to this really beautiful place. And I said, "Damn, Joe, this place is nice." And he said, "Frank, I deserve nice stuff. What about you?" Couldn't answer the question. And so one day we was out, and by this time I figured out he ain't gonna leave me nothing in his wheel. So we're just Joe and Frank at this time, and I just stopped kissing his ass and all of that. And so he said, "You know what, Frank, I'm rich." I said, "Joe, I know you're rich, so what? I mean, what, you want a cookie?" I mean, because now it don't matter. You ain't going to leave me no money, so we can stop hustling here. And he said, "Son, you don't understand. I'm rich because I got a friend like you." And so what that old man gave me, he gave me a quality of life, a quality of richness that I found in each and every one of you. Because what I've learned over the years is that there's nothing in life that I need that I can't get on the phone and call somebody. Welcome to recovery. Welcome to the beginning, if you knew, of the rest of your life. And please keep coming back, because I need your stories. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
paper sack. I'm all alone, and I'm lost from day and night. I need someone's hand carry me when I'm tired. I can't stay here no more. That mean old bartender just showed me the door. Somewhere, somehow, I'll win my fight someday, and we'll all be together on that broad highway. On that broad highway.